The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War and the Right of Succession from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free, or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first. And on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Welcome once again to another edition of what I call American Exposé. I'm Chris Kerner speaking to you on the 21st, is it? 21st, 22nd. Oh, we're getting close to the 22nd, that is. Oh, man. The things that are going on are, well, you know, I'm very suspicious of everything. Others are the same way. Here we see from Reuters, oil prices will likely remain high until at least 2010. And this is according to the International Monetary Fund of the United Nations system, listeners. And this is according to Chief Economist Raghuram Rajan. And this is stated in an interview with German business daily Handelsblatt. Yeah, it's a global economy, listeners. According to this Reuters article, there were concerns above all that, a surge in oil costs could cause a collapse in consumer confidence, any sudden acceleration in inflation. The paper quoted Rajan as saying in a preview of its Thursday edition. Well, listeners, this lovely Rita, as I call her, it's gained more intensity than Katrina. It's headed right towards the Gulf of Mexico, right towards the shores of Texas, and it's going to create turmoil there. Barring a miracle, it's going to create devastation. It's going to devastate the oil rigs and the oil refineries. It's going to skyrocket gas prices again. Unless the global economy comes to our rescue again. But keep in mind, as I said before, and I'm sure Darren said the same thing, the reason Bush did not sign the Kyoto Protocol is so this can be blamed on global warming. And I'm convinced that's the case. I'm convinced that's exactly what's happening here, listeners, that we're going to have to sign the Kyoto Protocol, and there is the crux of the situation. There it is. And so we're messed with this direction. We're embroiled in it. So this article says, quote, we have a triple whammy of limited oil supply, strong demand, and low reserves capacity, end quote, Rajan told the paper. And yet, the IMF has control of the oil wealth in the Middle East, or at least in Iraq. The European Central Bank need not cut interest rates to boost growth in the 12-nation eurozone, and there was currently enough global liquidity, he said. It was extremely important that Germany pushed ahead with economic reforms, or else the situation in Europe's biggest economy would deteriorate, Rajan said. Quite interesting. I tell you, it's just quite remarkable how these directions come into place. I see here from the paper, Chamber unfolds bioscience map, and this is quite revealing of Agenda 21. And before we do that, let's go to Global Insight. Oil prices remain the single largest threat to global recovery in the years ahead. Did you hear that? And once again, oil can be found here. It's not being searched out properly, according to many sources. Oil can be extracted from Oklahoma, listeners. I'm talking about Oklahoma people. Not Alaska, right here in Oklahoma. They aren't exhausted. According to some, it's a renewable resource, oil is. So this article from Global Insight, oil prices remain the single largest threat to global recovery in the years ahead. Strong demand for oil from the United States and China has caused heightened concern regarding a potential supply shortage. That's ridiculous. It's absurd. It's a set-up scenario. We're being set up on a daily basis. This hurricane is no different. This is another attack on our shores. Will this bring in more foreign troops to America from other countries? Let's wait and see. Recent attacks on oil facilities in Saudi Arabia have added a terror premium to oil prices, exasperating fears that costs will continue to skyrocket. One of the most likely oil price scenarios in the next couple of years. How will they affect world growth? Oh, my, world growth. In Global Insight's new multi-client study, Oil Price Scenarios, Crisis, Crunch, or Crumble, our oil industry experts explore three oil price scenarios that address the key uncertainties in world oil markets. Each scenario includes a detailed analysis, along with forecasts through 2006, accounting for factors such as oil market dynamics, macroeconomic impacts, and industry impacts. So the continuing, let's just say the continuing created crisis is very, very much on the way and being engineered, in my thoughts. Through the ecology movement through the 60s and 70s, first the no nukes scenario, no nuclear power plants. And so we stopped building nuclear power plants. And then now we have the oil crisis, started in 1973, to bring gas up to $1 a gallon. That's hard to remember, isn't it? $1 a gallon? That's just amazing, listeners. With oil prices near all-time highs, the prospects for excellent returns from direct investments in U.S. wells are the best in many years. This is according to U.S. Energy Resources. Invest in a new oil well is what they suggest. U.S. Energy Resources will send you information regarding the finest established U.S. oil producers, currently seeking investors for direct participation in oil wells to be drilled in proven locations. And there's a form that you can complete to let these people know how much investment capital you have to invest in exploration of oil in America, people. U.S. Energy Resources will send you details on the finest established U.S. oil and gas firms with proven track records of drilled successful producing oil and gas wells in Texas, Illinois, Kentucky, and nearby states. And they suggest you fill out the energy investor evaluation to receive details about these firms' current direct participation opportunities. And it's under the article I just covered, oil price to remain high until 2010, that Dennis put on the website from the IMF. Oil price to remain high until 2010, according to the IMF. And you scroll down and you learn to invest in U.S. crude oil. Quite amazing. These are sponsored links to this article I just covered. Sponsored links. Ah, people. The continuing directions are very, very obvious to me and to most of you. That's why you're listening. Here we see, out of Reuters, Wednesday, September 21st, today, oil prices rose over $1 on Wednesday as Hurricane Rita threatened U.S. Gulf of Mexico oil facilities. But rising fuel inventories helped ease concern for potential supply disruptions from the storm. U.S. light crude rose $1.15 to $67.35 a barrel. At $67.35 a barrel, the price was down from an earlier three-week high of $68.27. Hurricane Rita was heading toward the largest concentration of refineries on the U.S. Gulf Coast. The storm is forecast to make landfall on Saturday in Texas, home to a quarter of U.S. refinery capacity. Rita comes just 3 weeks after Hurricane Katrina hit the cluster of plants near the Louisiana and Mississippi coasts. Quote, people were worried post-Katrina as we have real tight product supply, end quote, said Jamal Qureshi, analyst at the PFC Energy in Washington. Quote, now we have a hurricane heading for the bigger part of the coastal refinery center, threatening to blow a huge hole in products supply, end quote. Refiners began preparing for Rita's onslaught on Wednesday. Oil company Marathon said it would shut down at 72,000 barrels per day Texas City refinery. Valero said it was reducing rates at its 243,000 BPD Texas City refinery and it's $85,000 or 85,000 BPD Houston refinery. BP released non-essential staff from its giant 460,000 BPD Texas City plant. Gasoline futures rose 7.74 cents to $2,540 a gallon. I'm sorry, $2.0540 a gallon. Gasoline has risen 15% this week. Rita strengthened to a Category 4 hurricane as it moved over the eastern Gulf of Mexico and could become Category 5, the largest storm, the strongest storm level, the U.S. National Hurricane Center said, and that is a fact at this point right now, listeners. It has reached Category 5. The winds are at least 165 miles per hour right now, as of this afternoon as well. U.S. refineries were still struggling after Katrina, which pushed oil prices to a record $70.85 a gallon, a barrel, and disrupted supply so badly that international reserves had to be tapped. Oil firms also reported that ahead of Rita, hundreds of workers had been evacuated from offshore Gulf of Mexico production facilities, which account for one-third of U.S. oil production. The U.S. gasoline stocks rose by surprise 3.4 million barrels last week. The U.S. government said analysts polled by Reuters had expected to fall to 200,000 barrels. Keep in mind, listeners, this is a created scenario. If hurricanes can be steered, they can be steered away from harm's way. This is designed to decimate our economy further. This is designed to relocate populations throughout this country. Sustainable communities will be built in that Gulf region of Texas, just like sustainable communities will be built in this Gulf area of Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi. Mississippi devastated. Just like the tsunami that happened at the end of the year, sustainable communities being built there. And where's that information about Bill Clinton? Where is that? Oh, man. Where is that? Oh, there, here it must be. And here it be. According to this information, dated the 16th of September, an initiative led by former President Clinton to tackle poverty, climate change, there you go, climate change, and other worldwide issues is launching with a gathering of political leaders and activists who are promising to pitch in and must put those pledges in writing. Here it goes, listeners. Here it is. Participants who fall short can't come back next year, said Jay Carson, spokesman for the Clinton Global Initiative. There it is. Among the 800 expected at a Manhattan hotel for the three-day event starting Thursday, that would be tomorrow, our British Prime Minister Tony Blair, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, and Clinton himself. What's Clinton himself going to be? Head of the World Trade Organization? UN Secretary General? Bill Clinton has much clout, as Larry Nichols said. He was never going to go away. Remember that? Clinton was never going to go away. Clinton must be related to Rockefeller. There it is. I've covered information about Digital Angel. Here I see dated September 1st, months after debate over whether private industry or the government should control the U.S. Agriculture Department's National Animal Identification System, have ended as a public-private partnership was suggested. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Mike Johns announced Tuesday the department's guiding principles for developing a system that allows the private sector to maintain animal movement data as part of the animal identification system and gives government and animal health entities access to the database for disease control. Private industry to track ID system, dated September 1st, 2005, listeners, from the Oklahoman. There's that word, public-private partnership again. public-private partnership. Well, let's do a little of that, of that public-private partnership. Also referring to United Nations Global Straitjacket by Joan Vion. She says a public-private partnership is exactly what it says it is. First, it is a partnership with a business arrangement. A partnership with a business arrangement. Mm-hmm. And it is for profit. This arrangement is sealed by a formal business agreement or contract. In business, a partnership provides its partners with the most flexible arrangement for doing business, and there is, or that there is. A partnership can have two or more partners and can have several layers of partnerships, all of which are interrelated. Secondly, a public-private partnership has partners that are both public, meaning government, and private, meaning individuals, corporations, foundations, and or non-governmental organizations. Historically, such deals are considered glaring conflicts of interest and, as such, not in the best interest of the people. The public partners include all levels of government, from local government to county, state, regional, and federal government. In addition to international agencies and foreign governments. Private partners, as mentioned, include a wide range of non-governmental organizations. These can include any corporations of substance, national, multinational, or transnational corporations, and non-governmental organizations like Planned Parenthood, the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, World Wildlife Federation, and local do-gooder foundation, and the Ford, Rockefeller, and or Carnegie foundations. Examples of public-private partnerships include sewer systems, power plants, water facilities, computers in classrooms, renovations in the Washington, or renovations to the Washington Monument, and many other similar projects. When you see these three words, know that our Constitution and representative government is being destroyed. Public-private partnership, listeners. It should be noted that there is a new form of governmental arrangements, which now governs society, called corporate governance. That has come about as a result of the new and prominent role which corporations are playing in helping to govern society. It fits in very well with public-private partnerships. There are some concerns, however, with the growing power of multinational and transnational corporations as they are trying to pass their own constitution called the Multilateral Agreement on Investment, MAI, which would allow corporations to sue countries if there is any political instability or losses they incur in doing business. Public-private partnerships. Government, nonprofit organizations, and corporations working together. Government being federal, state, local. And what did this article say? Private industry to track ID system, dated the 1st of September. Months of debate over whether private industry or the government should control the U.S. Agriculture Department's National Animal Identification System have ended as a public-private partnership was suggested. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Mike Johns announced Tuesday the department's guiding principles for developing a system that allows the private sector to maintain animal in movement data as part of the animal identification system and gives government and animal health entities access to the database for disease control. Quote, we are eager to work closely with industry as they develop and maintain databases that contain animal movement information, end quote, John says. Quote, after hearing the confidentiality concerns of producers, we envision a system that allows these databases to feed a single privately held animal tracking repository that we can access, end quote. The system will involve using tags placed on animals for production, mainly cattle and swine in Oklahoma, to track them from birth to slaughter. It will allow producers to trace movements of an animal within 48 hours to target a disease's origin and isolate the cause. There's the Hegelian dialectic to bring this about. See, with all our technology in place today, with all the clean living that is around today, and we have mad cow disease, swine flu, bird flu, all these created scenarios to make us more dependent on different directions and to take us off the food chain of the meat situation. That's a major concern that we should all have, all fitting into Agenda 21. Under Agenda 21, everybody's going to be a vegetarian, according to many who do the research. Scott DeWalt, Executive Vice President of the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association, said he supports a singular private entity database that would be producer-owned and operated. Well, there's the leash that brings you into the UN system of public-private partnerships. There's much more to this, but you get the picture. I don't really want to get into this Chamber Unfolds Bioscience map yet. This is another public-private partnership. This is dated September 9th from the Oklahoman. And once again, we have Hurricane Rita breathing down our throats. It's just amazing how this is being engineered. In my thoughts, it only makes sense that this is the case to bring about scenarios that are planned for under the Hegelian dialectic to control us all, get us out of our cars, bring the price of gas to a skyrocketing point, make us more dependent on foreign countries, and make us succumb to the Kyoto Protocol, which when you do research, it's very difficult to get to the bottom of what the Kyoto Protocol is all about. It's except to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels. Well, I'm sure we're below 1990 levels because we had business and industry. We had steel plants in 1990. We had all sorts of production going on in 1990. The production's disappeared from America, so the greenhouse gases and the cattle, you know, which are supposed to be producing greenhouse gases, they're less in this country as well. From Devant, Louisiana, directions to Devant are simple. Go to the end of the world and turn left. The end of the world, Louisiana, means going down, deep down, past New Orleans, and it's silent. Flooded neighborhoods through ruined St. Bernard Parish, where the oil spill after Hurricane Katrina, and deep and down even deeper, down into the sinking marshes and bayous of Clackamane's Marsh, where Creoles with lyrical French names talk matter-of-factly of walking the levee next to ghosts and spirits down to Devant. Except now it's hard to say what is Devant and what isn't Devant. New Orleans filled up with water slowly. Devant was swept away fast, destroying the false sense of security that ever-taller levees gave to the place. Even in battered New Orleans, tons go hushed when conversations turn to Plaquemines, or Plaquemine, which takes its name from a Native American word for persimmon. Quote, it's worse down there, bad, 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 end quote, they say. This is where Katrina acted like a tsunami, treating the big ring levee that comes to a looping end south of town, bent on the shape of a paperclip, as if it were a child's sand castle. The Mississippi River came roaring through there, frothing and white and mean, up over the levee on one side of town, and the salty marsh water broke through the levee on the other. Plaquemine, or Plaquemine, is the place where the people who want to resurrect New Orleans, people such as President Bush, who has vowed to build the levees higher to protect the Crescent City, might look for lessons in where people who love the marsh and build the levees want everyone to take note.
Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Get ready for the 10th Annual Old Pass Christian History Conference, hosted by the Church at Cahuilla, coming the weekend of October 1st and 2nd. Guest speakers will be John Weaver, the author of The Christian and Civil Government. Pastor Weaver's preaching style is in the tradition of those early colonial pastors whose pulpits were the cradle of America's liberty. Thomas McConnell is a noted speaker on biblical covenantalism and economics. John Quaid, he has taken his passion for God's law into practical application for everyday life, and others. Children are welcome. There is plenty of RV parking and tent camping. For more information, and if you would like to receive a brochure, call Pastor Warren Mark Campbell at 559-561-0802 or visit the FirstAmendmentRadio.com homepage for more information. Thank you. Notice, FirstAmendmentRadio.com is looking for new talent. Do you have the gift of gab? Do you got what it takes? Are you ready to go up against Alex Limbaugh, Rush Jones? Are you funny, entertaining, as well as informative? Maybe you know a local talent whom the nation deserves to hear. Send us a sample or email a bio for a live tryout. The nation is waiting to hear a new voice. It may be yours. We'll let the audience decide. Email us today, talent@firstamendmentradio.com. talent@firstamendmentradio.com.
Pick it up where I left off. It was the first line of defense thrown up by the human beings against Katrina, and it buckled, unable to withstand a surge that cascaded through fraying marshes that in another era might have slowed the water. Quote, Plaquemines has been kind of out of the news, end quote, Lieutenant General Carl Strzok, commander of the Army Corps of Engineers, said recently. Quote, but clearly, it's an important area. It needs to be brought back up, end quote. All that's left on some blocks in this town of 900 and some of the neighboring communities along the levee are concrete stoops. That's it. Churches and stores simply vanished, and a big chunk of the road that is so important to maintaining Louisiana's rich oil fields is washed away. Sturdy wood frame houses that survived when the wind got strong and the water got high in the past were ground into kindling, reduced to mere smudges of color in the sloping sides of the river levees. The levee that failed to protect Devant is twice as tall now, local officials say, as it was when Hurricane Camille blasted through the parish in 1969. All that extra dirt and clay had a lulling effect, and the men and women who worked the oil fields out in the marsh or piled the bayous for oysters got to thinking Devant was a safe place. Quote, people felt pretty good with the levee 18 and 19 feet high, end quote, said John Bartholomew, a parish councilman, and with droopy eyes and a quick smile. Quote, they say, now we have the levees. We don't have to worry about water. We'll just worry about wind, end quote. Wind and legends, that is. The Creole boys and girls down here put as much faith in the tales of their grandmothers, their memories, as they do to the Army Corps of Engineers. And the memories, said Plaquemines, was fated for doom. As the legend goes, the people of Lower Plaquemines took vengeance on a priest in the early 1800s, killing him after he was accused of committing a heinous crime. The act of vigilantism passed from generation to generation to scary bedtime stories filled with werewolves called Loupsgarus and screaming yai-yai-yai spirits came from consequences, the memories warned. Quote, there was something about thou shalt not kill, end quote. Simon du Plessis, 70, said as he looked for pieces of his small private plane on the narrow strip of land that his ancestors have owned since 1820. Quote, Dad said the place was cursed, end quote. Certainly Plaquemines, which now has a population of about 29,000, has suffered. During the Great Mississippi River Flood of 1927, the wealthy men upstream in New Orleans decided to save their city by blowing up a downstream levee and flooding Plaquemines. For decades, the parish was a corrupt kingdom ruled in dictatorial fashion by Judge Linder Perez, an iconic segregationist whose blunt... Excuse me, I've been bugged by a bug on my arm. I'm sorry. Whose blunt inflammatory speeches in the 1950s and 60s made him a national figure in the Southern stand against integration. The Plaquemines left Judge Perez ruled looks like a cursed place now. Cattle roam unattended on deserted streets. And pecan trees, once tall and majestic, lie down in the fields, toppled and broken. The lush groves that produced satsumas, sweet oranges coveted with harvest lesson of Louisianans, have gone brittle and brown, burned crispy by 14 feet of salty water that came through a 200-foot-wide break in the marsh levee. On the other side is wild Louisiana, part land, part water, a place that was vanishing even after Katrina. And then environmentalists are begging harder than ever for federal government to restore. Quote, as a child, I always used to think, what's beyond this? End quote, said du Plessis, who remembers going for swims in the Mississippi with his father. Quote, the ducks would fly off, and I would always wonder, where in the world would they go, end quote. This part of Plaquemines once had a boomtown feel to it. A railroad passed near the du Plessis home to bring in supplies for the oil rigs and bring out rice and oranges and pecans. The country stores held Friday night dances and showed movies, but the marsh has been dropping steadily. It has grown more sickly over the years as the Mississippi was trapped in a man-made channel that prevented it from spreading silt. Each year it sinks up to an inch. The lower it goes, the worse the storm surges become, and the more inhospitable the place becomes, even with its bigger levees. The diehards and, to hear the locals tell it, ghosts, even Bartholomew, a feet-on-the-ground sort who commandeered school buses to evacuate residents before Katrina struck, talks about the spirits. On the night before the storm, Bartholomew says, quite seriously, a good friend of his walked home with a whole pack of ghosts. Bartholomew asked him if he was scared, and the man replied, quote, what they gonna do? The dead can't hurt me, end quote. Lionel Williams, born and raised in Plaquemines Parish, felt a sense of foreboding around the same time. She says she saw two lines of ghosts. Bright people, she noted, invoking a local colloquialism for whites, marching over the levee. The ghosts were getting out of Devant. That was all she needed to see. She left also. Williams, who has been trying to find her house, also can't find her church. Bethlehem African Judah Baptist was strong enough to stick around for 143 years, celebrating an anniversary on the weekend before Katrina arrived. Now the sturdy brick sanctuary has gone missing. All that remains is a sign out front, which seems to invite congregants to a 43rd anniversary party. The one fell off. Quote, that Katrina, she really pitched a party, end quote, Williams said, shifting the blue kerchief on her head and wiped tears on the spot her church once stood. Quote, we just in slow motion. I feel like I'm a dream or in a dream, end quote. Up the road, another house of worship, St. Thomas, is a skeleton. Its windows and doors blown out. Its brick frame chipped and scraped, but still standing. Just amazing, people. Just amazing, people. Meyer was baptized there, celebrated her first communion there, and was married there, following the same track that the faithful in Devant have gone down since they broke ground for the church in 1844. She'll pray there again, she says, even though it's hard to imagine anyone but the buzzards inhabiting this place for a long, long time. Out back, there are people crying in the cemetery, walking slowly past headstones that commemorate the French and Creole families that made this place. The Fontellas and Gravelettes and Flagons. No one shall have to see what the weeping men and women in the burial ground are seeing, but they linger there, blinking their eyes, as if refocusing will bring some sense to what lies before them. The above ground Sarakabachi, which performed as well as in the storm, after the storm, for decade after decade, couldn't hold on anymore. The lids popped off more than a dozen and some let their coffins go floating out. A delicately carved wooden casket lies in the middle of the main path, upside down. Mud cakes its sides, and the little white angel figurines that once looked to the heavens from each of the coffin's corners are now staring straight down. There's a moving article. Dennis put it on the website. Ghost Town is what it's called, from the WashingtonPost.com, on the website AmericanExpose.com. I spent a little too much time with this, but I thought you should hear it. It's entry number 8 under September 21st today, listeners, if you want to read it again. Here we see Chamber unfolds bioscience map. This is dated September 9th, 2005. The Greater Oklahoma City Chamber of Commerce unfolded its long-awaited bioscience roadmap Thursday that officials claim points the way to more than 7,000 new jobs in the next decade. Listeners, this is relevant to Agenda 21 and public-private partnerships. This is dated once again September 9th of this year. The Chamber unveiled a regional bioscience strategic plan that calls for the state to implement 14 actions that would infuse the state's bioscience industry with research dollars, startup capital, and business expertise. Quote, this is the plan that we have been waiting for to springboard our bioscience center into the fast lane, end quote, said Carl Edwards, managing partner with the Oklahoma City-based Price Edwards & Company and chairman of the Chamber's steering committee for the strategic plan. Among the critical actions outlined by the plan are creation of a $250 million bioscience opportunity fund to spur research and a smaller seed fund to attract venture capital dollars for the state startup companies spun off by that research. The plan also calls for the state to fund the proposed $1 billion research endowment recommended last year by Governor Brad Henry. This is Governor Brad Henry's EDGE Committee, EDGE, EDGE Committee. Create an Oklahoma Bioscience Collaborative that would serve as a networking organization and establish an executive-in-residence program for startup companies. Oh, this gets better, people. This gets much better. The strategic plan was developed by the Ohio-based Bertel Consulting Firm, Walter Plosilla, Vice President of the nonprofit group's technology partnership practice, led the Bateel team that conducted the study of the state's bioscience sector that includes medical research and development, medical devices, hospitals and laboratories, drug and pharmaceutical companies, and agriculture biotechnology. The Bateel group interviewed more than 100 Oklahoma scientists, business leaders, and service providers, looked at the state's strengths and weaknesses, and created a benchmark from other markets for comparison. Quote, you aren't in it in the top tier, end quote, Plosilla said when asked to assess Oklahoma's bio industry. Quote, you are in the middle, moving toward the second tier, which is where I think your opportunity is, end quote. Oklahoma would rank higher against the competition, except for what Plosilla called a lack of critical mass of bioscience research in Oklahoma for a large bioscience employment base in the state. Quote, you're in your infancy stage, and yet in terms of building that critical mass, you have all the potential of these research areas, but you aren't there yet, end quote. In the state follows the roadmap outlined in the strategic plan. Those things will begin to fall into place, he said. Given investment from the public and private sectors, the state will create nearly 90 new bioscience-related companies in the next decade and create more than 7,000 jobs that average $15,000 above the annual wage for the region, he said. Boy, if that's not UN lingo, I don't know what is, listeners. Quote, what he laid out is that what can you do in 18 to 24 months, and what can you do in the next 3 to 5 years? This is not something that is just happening overnight, end quote, Plosilla said. The challenge lies in finding the money to implement these actions, said Greg Main, president of the nonprofit economic development organization, I2E, and a member of the strategic plan's steering committee. Quote, we may need to think outside the box and not try to rely on existing revenue sources, Main said. The message here is that Oklahoma has a big opportunity, and unless it creates this opportunity by everybody working more diligently and more cooperatively with each other, the opportunity we have won't be realized, end quote. Chamber President Roy Williams will talk about the report at an I2E-sponsored BioLife Science Symposium on Tuesday at the Cox Convention Center. And certainly this was September 9th, so it's already a done deal. So we have a bioscience strategic plan under the guise, I say, of Agenda 21. 7 critical priorities to growing Oklahoma's bioscience sector were established by a strategic plan commissioned by the Greater Oklahoma City of Commerce, Oklahoma City Chamber of Commerce, and developed by the Batil Technology Partnership Practice. And the priorities are: form an Oklahoma Bioscience Collaborative on an industry-driven advocate on behalf of the Biosciences and Networking Organization. Create a statewide Oklahoma Bioscience Opportunity Fund of $250 million. Create a privately managed $5 million to $10 million bioscience seed fund and attract venture capital dollars to the greater Oklahoma City region. Establish a chief executive officer in residence program of experienced senior managers who will serve as a mentor or interim chief executive officer of early stage companies. Provide expanded in-depth services to bioscience entrepreneurs. Develop and implement an industry-led branding, marketing, communication strategy. Conducted an internal education campaign to increase knowledge and understanding of bioscience. On the net, listeners, you can find this at www.okbio.org. That's okbio.org, okbio.org. Maybe we'll get this on the site. A public-private partnership, listeners. A public-private partnership. Let's revisit what Joan Vion says about public-private partnerships. It's just exactly what it says. First, it is a partnership that is a business arrangement, and it is for profit. This arrangement is sealed by a formal business agreement or contract. In business, a partnership provides its partners with the most flexible arrangement for doing business that there is. A partnership can have two or more partners, and it can have several layers of partnerships, all of which are interrelated. Secondly, a public-private partnership has partners that are both public, meaning government, and private, meaning individuals, corporations, foundations, and or non-governmental organizations. Historically, such deals were considered glaring conflicts of interest, and as such, not in the best interest of the people. The public partners include all levels of government, from local government to county, state, regional, and federal governments, in addition to international agencies and foreign governments. Private partners, as mentioned, include a wide range of non-governmental organizations. These can include any corporations of substance, national, multinational, or transnational corporations, and non-governmental organizations like Planned Parenthood, the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, World Wildlife Federation, the local Do-Gooder Foundation, and the Ford, Rockefeller, and or Carnegie Foundations. Examples of private partnerships include sewer systems, power plants, water facilities, computers in classrooms, renovations to the Washington Monument, and many other similar projects. When you see these words, these three words, public-private partnership, know that our Constitution and representative government is being destroyed. It should be noted that there is a new form of governmental arrangements, which now governs society, called corporate governance. This has come about as a result of the new and prominent role which corporations are playing in helping to govern society. It fits in very well with public-private partnerships. There are some concerns, however, that the growing power of multinational and transnational corporations, as they are trying to pass their own constitution called the Multilateral Agreement on Investment, which would allow corporations to sue countries if there is any political instability or losses they incur in doing business. Interestingly, at the Democratic Leadership Council Conference on Progressive Governance held on April 25, 1999, the German Socialist Prime Minister Gerhard Schroeder said, quote, "The internationalization of economies should not be followed by an internationalization of politics. We have to include the private business community. They should have their own liberties, the freedom of choice, and the freedom to make decisions they consider right, end quote. When you bring these entities together, where does the power lie? The deepest pockets? Is that government? No, it's business. Another form of transfer of power and destruction of our American form of representative government. As a result, representative government disappears. What this means is that as corporations gain more and more power, their circle will become much larger than the other circles. Government will become less significant and, in time, a hollow structure. This is the point about the privatization of federal jobs. It's on our website, AmericanExpose.com. It is there right now on the left. It is very, very important to understand that. Privatizing America's public lands, AFGE privatization. Very, very important, people, that site, AFGE privatization. Is very, very important, listeners, as this is under the guise of global governance of the UN system. This is what it's all about. The American Federation of Government Employees. And there's plenty of information where you can see Bush's privatization scheme. Is your job a target? I'm talking about federal jobs now, listeners. And you can punch into any state of the union and see what jobs are being lost. Any state of our country. And you can see how privatization is being utilized now. It's crazy. Because most people don't have a clue about it. Most people don't do any research. So what do you have? The end result of public-private partnerships, government, non-governmental organizations. Then you have multinational corporations, transnational corporations, and the foundations, Carnegie, Rockefeller, Ford, Mellon. In time, these industrialists who empowered the NGOs will rule the world through reinvented government, listeners. That's what Clinton was promoting during his administration. And that's where Clinton is right now in rebuilding the world under the guise of saving the world from poverty, people. And poverty is being created right now, in Texas, Galveston, Texas, Houston, Texas. Poverty is being created right now. It's a ghost town. 1 million people have been ordered to leave today because of a steered hurricane, listeners, because of a created crisis. If they can be steered, they can be steered away from harm's way. Why are they being steered right at our oil supplies and the refineries? To make gas skyrocket, to get us out of our cars, to cripple our economy further. As a result of NAFTA, formed by GATT, GATT formed in 1947, and the United Nations Industrial Development Organization formed around that time too, UNETO. Here we have jobs going below the border and overseas. Outsourcing of jobs. Outsourcing of jobs everywhere. You cannot believe how this is being done until you do your research onto this. You can learn about the American Federation of Government Employees and what they're up against. The privatization of their jobs. What's going to happen to them, listeners? There is the point in the problem. The Bush privatization scheme, which is actually